Good morning, everyone.
One, two.
Welcome to our session. Thank you for sticking around this morning. Welcome to Flipped Knowledge Production, faculty and students working beyond the classroom. My name is Susan Panestri. I'm an instructional technologist at the Center for New Designs and Learning and Scholarship. Woo, that's a mouthful. At Georgetown University, and I'm joined by my two colleagues as well, which I'll let them introduce themselves.
Does this work?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. I'm Lucas, and I am a master's student at Georgetown assisting these two beautiful ladies in whatever they wish to do in instructional technologies.
We call him the Swede. My name is Janet Russell. I'm the Director of Technology Enhanced Learning at Georgetown. And yes, thank you for sticking around. It's good to see everyone.
Alrighty, so in our presentation, we will discuss how social media features in lecture capture technology, in our case, Echo 360, can be used to mine captures and repurpose content in various contexts. So whether it's learning modules for flipped classroom lessons, to fully online courses, to even MOOCs. We will be sharing research from a grant we received from Echo 360, and we will focus primarily on the workflow of one professor at Georgetown University. But we did want to let you know that we will also mention other tools that can be used to repurpose content in case you're not using lecture capture. But that'll be later on in our session. So, now that you know a little bit about us, we'd love to know a little bit about you. So I'm just going to ask a few questions for demographics. How many of you are teaching or faculty in this room? Okay. And how about any staff members out there? Okay, seems like more staff. Great. And how many of you are using lecture capture right now at your institutions or helping to support lecture capture use? Wonderful, wonderful. So are you using it to record full lectures? Full lectures. How about anybody repurposing content at all? Okay, great, great. So we have a room full of very knowledgeable people. So we will, you know, pick your brains as well towards the end of our presentation so we can figure out more what more we can do. So this is great. So our presentation is broken down into three major sections. I will be covering background and context. Lucas will take care of the implementation and execution. And then Janet is going to talk about the perspective, the futures, and how it can work for you. Okay. So let me begin with a little bit of background and context. We've discovered three major trends, really, that help enable the shift to online education that we see today. The first one is ubiquitous computing and broadband. It just seems as though everyone has some sort of device, right? Whether it's a laptop, tablet, smartphone, maybe some of you have all three, some of you that are lucky out there have all three of those. And so we are constantly connected to the internet via, whether it's cellular data or Wi-Fi, but it's like we're always on everywhere, anytime. I mean, even just look around this room, people are connected. But not only in this room, I mean, we're talking about institutions. Here at Georgetown, we have a picture of students on the lawn at Healy, and you can clearly see that even students are always connected. And so these devices have built-in capture capacity, which is great, and they can help transform offline artifacts to digital assets very easily. They can capture, digitize, and store data. Easier than ever before. So the ubiquitous way of computing offline content enabled by these devices has moved from something highly professional, right, with the upscale video, to a widely accessible do-it-yourself capture, basically, or DIY capture. So before you needed like high-end video cameras, and sometimes you still do need that for really highly professional MOOCs, but you can simply record and capture using your laptop, too, for content. So parallel to the development of ubiquitous computing, we have the proliferation also of Web 2.0 tools and social media features. I'm sure all of you are familiar with the like button, the share button, right? You can plus one something. So just this idea of more participation and not just publication on platforms. We have this constant opportunity to comment on things and share things, right? And these uses of apps or tools such as Google Drive or wikis to help collaborate and, you know, for all of us to be sharing our work and working together. So perhaps as a natural consequence of ubiquitous computing and social media tools, online education is exploding at unprecedented speeds. We're just not talking about MOOCs. We're talking also about the whole spectrum of online learning, right? So from highly produced MOOCs to small flipped classrooms, but then there's also this anxiety and uncertainty that professors have among universities on how to approach this new world of with online-powered blended learning solutions, right? So we know how to do offline learning pretty darn well, right? But we're still a little bit stuck with this online learning and online teaching, right? And taking the offline content, as we know, taking offline content and putting it online is simply not good enough, right? So those who have jumped on the online learning train and have begun to create MOOCs, it can be very exciting, but then they've realized it can also be a lot of work, right? So the process of repurposing content for online environment can be time and resource consuming. And so here's a snippet from the Chronicle. There's a quote, maybe some of you can't read that. It says, "The insights that come with teaching massive online courses, however, come at a price. Many professors got a lot out of teaching MOOCs, but teaching MOOCs took a lot out of them." This is from Princeton University's Robert Sedgwick. "Had spent hundreds of hours readying the material, devoting as much as 2 weeks each to recording and fine-tuning videotaped lectures. The preparation itself," he says, "was a full-time job," right? So it's not only MOOCs that we're talking about. We're even talking about, you know, faculty that want to just do flipped lessons. I mean, this can also be very time-consuming. Just we have also another quote from one of our professors at Georgetown who describes the time commitment needed to edit her classroom lectures to reuse in a flipped classroom. So she says, "I used Camtasia, which is a lecture capture product, to capture the entire class lecture so that I didn't have to create examples again. I did spend a great deal of Saturdays and Sundays last winter and spring cutting the Camtasia file into smaller 5 to 10 minute sections and re-recording the audio. It took a lot of time." So I'm sure many of you are familiar with this, right? So while it may be easy to capture and record offline material, we're still, you know, there's this tough ability to adapt that material into pieces, right, that makes sense and can be delivered through an online environment. So there's this gap between the offline and online, and how can we help bridge this gap, right? And so before we begin with the implementation, I just wanted to say that there is a window of opportunity with these three trends that intersect. I mean, there's a window of opportunity to develop a new workflow that acts as the bridge to offline and online content using capture technology and also these Web 2.0 and social media features. And interestingly enough, I mean, I know there's a lot of conversations been going on at ELI, and while I didn't attend one of the sessions yesterday, we just figured our mission then is to create a sustained workflow of capturing and repurposing lecture content, right? But then we just have this issue of like how to do that. And so one of the sessions that my colleagues, I didn't attend it, so I'm gonna let Janet really maybe speak to this.
I don't know if anyone else was at the session or if the presenters are here. It was the University of Minnesota, Walker and Brooks. I don't know if any of you were there, but this is, yeah, it was a really interesting session, and we don't have this kind of data, so it was fun for me to see it. This is what we see with our MOOCs, and that bridge that Susan was talking about of trying to use people's experience to move them towards being able to create and develop this content in a way that lets them also have a life. So what was interesting about this, these are MOOCs, so that's one end of the spectrum that Susan has been talking about. They broke down the number of hours that their instructors and TAs put into creating the MOOC, into planning and executing, and then there's the total. I mean, look at these numbers, right? 400s, 300s, almost 500. Here's one at 72. This was the one faculty member who had been teaching online. So, you know, huge difference between her, the needed effort on her part to create this MOOC versus the others. So that's kind of what we're trying to get at here. So,
thank you. Yeah.
So moving into this workflow that we're talking about, I'm going to let Lucas take over and talk about implementation.
Exactly. And so basically now we're going to talk a little bit about how exactly did we do this. What did we do and what did it look like and what were the results of that? So we started with figuring out that we have Echo 360 university-wide. Anyone, any professor can decide to record their lecture, so they will basically swoop into classroom, put on a microphone, hit record, and their one-hour lecture will be recorded and end up on Blackboard about 2 hours later for the students to review. And this is what that interface for the students would look like. They would go online on Blackboard, find the specific lecture capture, and click on it, and get to this page. And there are some tools here on the sidebar. They can search the lecture, which is great for students when they're trying to find pieces that they remember but can't necessarily know exactly what time that piece or information appeared at. And then there's a bookmark tool, which the students can use for themselves to sort of annotate the lecture at specific times in the lecture. And then there's the discussion tool. And it's a discussion tool that we thought was particularly interesting in this case, right? Because that means that anyone that can access this lecture, which is anyone in the course, and can at any time in the lecture stop and create a discussion on that particular timestamp, right? So it's a discussion that's associated with a time in the lecture. So knowing that we had that and knowing that we had the ability to record, we figured, well, let's try this. Let's try to do a wholesale recording of one semester of lectures, then identify online optimized segments within that lecture. So taking that 1 hour lecture and trying to sort of parse it out into smaller pieces that make sense on their own and in an online context. And then we use these segments to flip the classroom later. So we asked for volunteers, and we had a great professor named Frank Ambrosio who teaches philosophy at Georgetown. And he teaches a class on existentialism. So we figured, let's record this entire semester of classes and then do the mining and find these nuggets. And then next time he teaches it in a year, use those sort of on those segments to flip his classroom. So we did it. We recorded every single lecture. And at the end, we're like, well, now we have all this material and we need to go through it and sort of parse it out and identify these online segments, online optimized segments in his lecture. And he had a great student in his class named Rita Pearson. So she actually then got hired as an RA to go through some of the lectures and find these segments.
So, Lucas, can I just interrupt one
absolutely.
Minute and say, you know, there's a failed experiment in there, too, which we're glossing over, and some of you have heard me talk about this before. We love Frank, and he was really enthusiastic about this. And the original plan was that, of course, Frank would go through his own content and mark the places that he thought were those nuggets. But as you might imagine, it sounded great at the time, but that never actually happened. And
exactly.
Thus enters Rita, the TA.
Exactly. So a person that took the class and was familiar with the class and really liked the content too, right? She loved the class and got tasked to do this. And she did it, so now we're going to show exactly how she did it. So I will show two little videos that I'm going to just sort of talk over to show what it looked like. So, hang on 1 second here. This version was sometimes last year. We're usually like one step behind for some strange reason. So it wasn't the latest at that time. All right, so basically this is what it looks like, right? So she comes in, watches the lecture and reviews it and identifies small segments. And she takes those notes on a piece of paper. And then she ingests those notes at the end in the Echo 360. So she pauses at a specific time, so 5 minutes and 15 seconds would be the start of a segment that she identified, goes to the discussion tool up here, and types in start segment number one, and then gives that a title. This particular piece was about freedom. And then she types in some notes in the message box, basically saying what it was about and how it relates to other content that's happening in occurring later in the lecture, and then just hits submit. And then she does the same thing for the end of a segment. So this particular segment, let's say, ended at 7 minutes and 38 seconds, which would have been a 2-minute segment that she identified that was pretty freestanding, pretty solid on its own. And she basically typed in end segment number one, and then hit submit. And what happens is, which is pretty neat, see if this video keeps on playing, is that in this box, in the discussion box, you get a list where it basically says start segment one, end segment one, start segment one, end segment one. And with each associated timestamp, which means that the editing of this lecture, like the actual editing of taking out those small pieces, becomes very easy. I was tasked with doing that. It took me an hour lecture to just take her timestamps and sort of produce these small nuggets. It took me 5 minutes. Because you just use those timestamps to ingest it in the system and create the small timestamps, or create the small lectures. So, say for one 75-minute lecture, she was able to mine about 5 2-7-minute segments. For her to go through an hour of lectures and do the actual annotations took about 3 hours. So 1 hour lecture took 3 hours to go through. And that's obviously why Frank didn't do it himself, but why Rita, while being an undergrad research assistant, was able to do so. So great, so we thought that there's something that, that works here. And we're running out a little bit of time. We have a segment that she did identify, a 2-minute segment about Professor Ambrosio talking about the etymology of metaphor. I'm not gonna show it now, but you can find this presentation online later and take a look at it yourself. Just to see an example of what it would look like. So it worked out pretty well. Like the tools seemed to work, the workflow seemed to work, and we got some pretty good nuggets that we'll be able to reuse for later contexts and purposes, online contexts and purposes. But there were some other factors that also contributed to it being successful. And one being that the structure of the lectures were very topical, basically meaning that Professor Ambrosio taught on authors each lecture. So he would have 1-2 weeks cover a specific author, an existentialist author or philosopher, which means that when Rita went reviewed the lecture, she knew that she was looking for material that pertained to that author, meaning that all other fussiness or sort of discussion that takes place in a classroom, naturally, that didn't pertain to the author, she could exclude that. So she knew very well what material she was looking for while mining the lecture. So the fact that the lecture was very topical really helped her in sort of guiding what she was looking for and what segments were identified as good ones. And the second thing that contributed to success, we believe, is the lecture and speaking style, really, of Ambrosio. So he was doing a lot of, I guess, what's it called? Debate is a thing in this country. I'm not from here, I'm from Sweden, so we don't really debate, we all consensus all the time. So we wouldn't really know about that. Whereas Frank is great at it, right? He did a lot of debate in school, which means that he is just a natural speaker, right? So he sounded always very coherent, even when he didn't know what he was talking about, which really helps here, because there was very few ums and ems, and very few interruptions in his speaking, which really helps when trying to mine these lectures and create good 2-7 minute segments. And the last thing being the TA's help, or the RA's help in the situation. It doesn't have to be an RA or TA. It could really just be any student who's familiar with the content. And more importantly, someone who took the class and really enjoyed it, and also consumed the material from the student perspective. We think that had Frank done this himself, we would probably have gotten different segments than if Rita did it, right? Because Rita knew the material, but from the side of a student, and not from the side of the professor. So we think that really helped as well to create really good, solid segments. So, yeah.
So, but wait, before you move on, I was just going to say, I'm hoping, and we are having conversations with Frank, and it would be great to do a study on this, but that, I mean, maybe a case study, sort of more anecdotal, to talk to him about, now that he's doing this, how is it changing how he does structure the content, right? I mean, like Lucas says, it's already topically structured and so lends itself, but there might be other things he could do, and he's open to that. And that will also help us prep faculty to thinking about how they might do their face-to-face courses that can aid and abet what they might mine later as nuggets. I was also going to say, I mean, Frank has experience with the teaching company. I don't know if you guys know that. So he, you know, he was a gold mine for us. So that worked really very well.
And I think also that, well, what Frank, I interviewed Frank a couple of times throughout this, and what he really emphasized that was the nice thing about it was that he didn't have to think too much about it, right? It was sort of happening automatically. He doesn't have to write a script right in front of a camera and sort of repeat that script a bunch of times before they get the perfect take. He could just go in and do whatever he's already doing, and then after that fact, try to find his online optimized nuggets. But exactly, are there ways that we can make that sure that that happens for all faculty and not just for Frank, since he already had some of the characteristics that we thought was pretty great?
And probably like some of you, and we've talked about this before at some EDUCAUSE sessions, we are under, I want to say orders, but that's probably, especially since I'm being recorded, I shouldn't say that. But we're trying to be very careful about things like academic continuity, right? And so our faculty are already moving towards lecture capture. So in a sense, Frank's already won. He's just capturing, it's just happening. So if a student is sick or off to a ball game, or if, like today, there's snow and students can't get to class, he already has that box checked. So it's already a win in that sense, and what he does after that is all extra plus. Are you sure we don't have time to play the other, or should I go? Okay. All right, so I'm going to talk about perspectives, futures, and how this could work for you. Hopefully you're already seeing ways, and again, maybe some of you are already doing this, and we really want to hear from you. Well, we felt like this was successful, and we got our feet wet in a couple of ways and really liked it. And now we want to kind of move to the next phase. Like Susan said, students have all kinds of peripheral devices with them at all times, and they could participate in this. It wouldn't have to be just the TA. So we're thinking that could we design assignments? And we're not trying to be mercenary about this, right? I mean, these would be pedagogically sound assignments asking students to mine the lectures. Now, of course, we're not going to have them necessarily edit out the chunks for Frank, but if we design really good prompts, looking for those places where students either have this epiphany, like, oh, right, they get past that threshold moment, if we can design those kinds of prompts, tell students those prompts, talk to them about the overarching assignment that we're going for, and then give them, of course, a practical guide how to mark up the lecture in the discussion board, that this in and of itself could be very juicy for us. I mean, like Lucas said, we're probably getting different mining nuggets from students than we would get from Frank. And that could go either way, right? I mean, we have to do some quality control. But it'll also be interesting to see from students to students to students what things they might mind given the prompt and see where we end up. So we are right now trying to work out our own instructional design for this sort of activity. And this is where we want to, I mean, you're always welcome to jump in, but we're really interested in whether you've tried this or if you have particular ideas about what kind of design we might do to bring students more into this, which does, you know, many hands lightens the load, but again, in a pedagogically sound way. We're also interested in the other tools and technologies that you guys might bring to bear. As Susan said, you know, we're Echo 360, but other schools aren't. So there are other lecture capture softwares that surely can do this. There are other just softwares that aren't necessarily even designed for lecture capture that can do this same thing. We've heard some really great presentations here. This is just SoundCloud, right? So one example. And then we have heard some other presentations. Go ahead. From folks here. I was at Brook College, did a presentation on BOCAT. I don't know if any of you were there. So it wouldn't have to just be audio. We're focusing on audio right now for a number of reasons. I mean, we are doing, you know, high-end MOOC production. That's why we all look very tired. But I'm really interested in audio. Or what are the other kinds of content besides video? I think we're kind of at a place where we're, you know, we're just dazzled by video. And if we stop and think, it's not necessarily always the best media. It's not always necessary. And if it's not necessary, that opens the door a little wider. It certainly reduces the work for us, but it also sometimes can help focus us more on the pedagogy. What is the point, right? And it's usually not, it's not necessarily video. That point can often be made and made better with audio. So we're very interested in that. And of course, with MOOCs, we may never be able to get away from high production video, but certainly with our hybrid courses, I'm preparing an online course right now. No one's going to film me, right? So I'm going to have to figure out how to do this on my own, and we have to enable other faculty to do the same. So there are other possibilities for content and mining that content. Yeah, so, all right, we're ready for discussion and questions.
Right, let me do this real quick. Yeah. Since there's an online audience, I will...
Has Frank used the nuggets in a flipped exercise yet?
He does use the nuggets. He has a beautiful website called My Dante, if you want to look that up. You know, this kind of cuts both ways. He's like a special case for us because he's very thoughtful. He's been around for a long time. He's very open to this stuff. So that works well for us. The way it doesn't work so well for us is he's gotten special treatment. So sometimes we have to be real careful because he has this beautiful website that we've designed and built for him. So, and I don't know that we can do that for all faculty, right? We're trying to help them figure out how to use this, you know, to flip and maybe just via Blackboard, that sort of thing. Yeah. Yes.
Hi, I'm from the University of Groningen in the Netherlands. We've been doing a lot of lecture recordings ourselves, and for a long time putting them on Blackboard just the way they were. And right now for our flipped classroom project, because I've been thinking a lot about reusing those materials and cutting them up, et cetera. We've actually not done that, but we've started having the teacher make a very short video clips specifically about one subject and building up a database with that, which he just uses software like Screencast or Camtasia for, turned out not to be that time-consuming as I first thought, and I was wondering how this... My biggest worry was that you're just going to copy offline content directly to online content, and it might become very... Very diffuse and not very focused for students to look back on.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I mean, one of the things we hope to be careful about is not just mining the nuggets, but what is the content or the context around those nuggets. Now, for someone like Frank, it's going to be easier, and it sounds like maybe your faculty member, because they're doing face-to-face. This is a hybrid thing, a flipped classroom. So it's one thing to say to students, hey, before I see you on Thursday, go look at this and do this, because you've just given the context. And then when you see them, you interact. But if it's totally online, then you're going to have to be more careful. And yes, I think you end up, the concern is just recreating almost another boring static resource. One thing we are trying to do, but we're not very far with this, is place these nuggets someplace where other faculty can use them, right, and tag them in such a way that they become a resource for other folks. That sounds fantastic. Yeah, of course, it's difficult, but I haven't tried it, but rumor has it that we now have a way of doing that at Georgetown We have a D space, and if folks are in Blackboard, they can search for particular things, find that content, and then use it. Perhaps not well, but at least use it.
Yeah, I would just want to say that, yeah, we encourage like OERs, and so we always point people to the Khan Academy sites or other things on YouTube out there just for those specific segments instead of just, you know, recreating the wheel all the time. It's, a lot of stuff is already out there.
I have a couple of questions. One, my Dante, is that .com, .edu, .net, .biz?
I'm not sure, actually, okay. Right now. Is it probably Georgetown? My guess is if you search Frank, my Dante,
yeah.
You'll find it.
You will. My Dante in quotes, and then Frank will be the first guess.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. And my second, I am unclear about what you're using the nuggets, how you're using the nuggets. I understand that we're pulling out, you know, 2 to 5 minute little nuggets of lecture, but then what happens to those nuggets and how are they reincorporated? Are they just thrown out? I'm unclear as
to how. Yeah, it's a great question. Sorry, we kind of, I guess, glossed over that. We're using them in two ways, but you can imagine more. Frank is using them to flip his classroom. Not in the moment, right? So he's teaching, we're capturing, doing all this stuff. Next time he teaches, that content is already online. So he doesn't have to spend time in class talking to students, giving them the, you know, 5 minute introduction of, you know, blank. They can get that online. I mean, it's sort of a traditional flip. Then when they come to him face to face, he can talk to, you know, engage them around that topic. Perhaps better yet, via whatever assignment he's given them to do in Echo, and again, I'm sure other softwares do this, he'll see what the students were marking up and how they were thinking and talking about it. So he's armed with that data to go into the classroom and say, wow, it looks like you spent a lot of time on that nugget, but and you're asking the right questions or you've gotten confused about this, so there's that. Frank is also lined up to do a MOOC, it turns out, in part because of this. So none of this will be good enough quality, but it might give him a transcript from which to work. And then he puts this stuff on his website, the My Dante. Did that help?
Okay. All right. I'm curious in thinking about making an assignment where students are identifying these nuggets, if there's a way to kind of take it further than that so that part of what they do is identify the nuggets, but then there's some added benefit that they're getting out of it that maybe doesn't become part of the flipped materials, but say that they're making connections between different pieces of lecture. And in the parts of doing that, they're finding those useful nuggets, but it's not the end product for them. Like, what makes it a rich experience or allows them to do something really different with the lectures? And so my brain's just kind of spinning in that
right.
way. I'm curious what other ideas you have.
Well, I mean, part of what we're thinking, I mean, this is not my area, but it, for all of us, right, there are those threshold concepts that we know students have to get, but that are often difficult. We also know there are misconceptions. Right? And everyone who teaches knows more or less. I mean, you always have to be prepared for fresh misconceptions, but there's often very standard ones. And bottlenecks. Sometimes those bottlenecks are from the student end, sometimes they're from the faculty end, sometimes both. So constructing assignments very purposely to flush out those issues can be very, very helpful. I mean, Frank is going to have a sense, right? I mean, like Lucas said, what Frank would pick out might be different than what students would pick out, because Frank, if he's going to step back and say, "Wow, I really nailed existentialism in that 3 minutes. I was amazing, right? That's good, and that's worthwhile, and that's usable for many things." But the students are going to mark that probably differently and say, "Wow, this seemed like it, was in conflict with what you said earlier. That sort of thing." Does that? Well, one of the things I'm thinking, again, I want to hear from you guys. One of the tools I think that was up there, but I didn't mention, is Vital. So and that's a film mining tool, right? And you have students write essays. So you give them a particular prompt, and then they use those little film clips embedded in their response. So something like that could work.
A few years ago, we got a complaint from the dean of one of our colleges that they were getting ready to kick a student out of their program. And so I went and talked to the dean, and I said, what happened? And they says, well, he was recording the lectures and posting them for his classmates to listen to, and we found out about it. And I said, why don't you hire the guy to set up a social media collection service? But I was just wondering, are you seeing anything where students are doing the capturing and you have a media Dropbox for them to upload their work to?
I mean, I'll be curious to hear what our student has to say. And Susan, again, I teach, and I have my, occasionally a student will say, do you mind if I record you? And it does, you know, it's sort of like, oh, because I, of course it's kind of terrible, right? Because it's my business to be open about this stuff. But it's kind of more comforting when we can be sort of in control of it. But I don't know that anyone, Lucas, are you aware of any faculty that is setting up letting students do the recording? And
not that I know of, no. But I know that, for example, the times that the Echo 360 software had been sort of iffy, the TAs had brought their own recording devices and done that, just the audio piece, and then exactly put it in Dropbox and shared it with the rest of the students. That has been the task of the TAs, though.
Mm-hmm. But that's been not sort of, like a sort of grassroots upswelling.
Exactly, no.
Of, yeah. Yeah. And my guess is if some of the students are doing it, they probably aren't telling us, just like that student. Yeah. Are you aware of any, Susan?
I mean, I think right now we also use ShareStream at Georgetown, which is a media service integrated with Blackboard, and so students are now able to upload files to there. But personally, I'm not sure if they're doing that on their own.
Lucas with the microphone.
Hi, I'm actually an undergraduate student in Hamilton College, and this really speaks to me. Thank you. This really speaks to me because one thing I love doing in my time is going on internet forums and seeing like an article that was posted or a video that was posted and the organic debate that comes out of that. And, you know, like people of their own volition take, you know, hours upon hours to debate these things with facts and evidence. And one thing I've always wanted the classroom to have is something like that. So I've wondered, have you guys thought about using this to further the discussion so that a student who makes a comment in class that might be false can't get away with it because another student will come in and be like, you're wrong, after the class?
I love that idea. And you're going to hate what I say. So getting back to sort of nervous, you know, we have nervous students, we have nervous faculty, we have nervous administrators. You can guess what they're nervous about in terms of capturing. You know, we're doing what we call lecture capture. If you move to classroom capture, for example, and start capturing debate or student voices, all kinds of weight comes down upon you. Concern about privacy, etc. I don't mean it can't be done. It can be. You just have to do all these other things. So we haven't done any of that. But I think it's I love your idea, and I think it's fabulous. And with MOOCs right now, come on, right? That should be possible.
In fact, for Frank's class, one is preparing a MOOC on. It's actually an adaption of the MyDanta website. So if you check it out, you will see that. But they have been actually recording discussions in the classroom using a microphone that picks up everyone's voice to see if they can find a cool and interesting discussion that takes place in the classroom, and use that for the MyDanta MOOC that's coming up. So yeah.
I was just going to say, too, before the next question, that we, in one of our MOOCs, we have like a faux discussion, you know, so it's a thing. So, you know, it's a staged, well, students curious, asking the professor questions. Yeah.
One other thing that we've been discussing at my faculty in reusing lecture recordings is not so much about the content of the recording, but for instance, using them for first-year students to train their academic skills in how do you process this information coming out of a lecture, how would you summarize it maybe in the discussion? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I think it's a great idea, and I hadn't thought of it, so thank you for that. I think that's one of the great ways to repurpose this content and to build good instructional design around it. Our faculty, again, are talking a lot about doing modular, you know, curriculum creation, and then using it particularly across schools, you know, like our School of Foreign Service or like over in the medical campus. So I think that would be a perfect setup for that kind of thing. Yeah, good idea.
When I read the description for this particular session, I came in with a different vision of what you guys were going to talk about than what has been discussed. Not that this hasn't been informative, it just wasn't what I was expecting. Part of what I was expecting when I was reading that you were mining the discussion board notes and things like that, mm-hmm. was that there was going to be a whole class of students that were bookmarking particular parts of a lecture, or their organic notes. Not that it was, okay, I want you to sit through this lecture and do that for us. Is there any plans to go through more organic type notes and data that students may have on these lectures versus having one particular student or two particular students sit down? Because I think you'll find that the majority of students will have something vastly different than that one exceptional student like Rita.
Right. Well, and just so yes, and I'll tell you what is happening in that. But just to be clear, like the fabulous Rita did the first cut, you know, I mean, Frank, default didn't work, but then Rita. And when we say one or two students per se, I mean, we want to get the whole class involved, but we're signing in pairs students to answer a particular prompt. So if you did not go to Perry Sampson's presentation, I think Eli should hire me to reference all other presentations. But Perry Sampson from University of Michigan. He's a weather meteorologist. He also, I mean, now I'm going to sound like I'm working for Echo 360. He also uses Echo 360, and he uses something called Lecture Tools that does very much what you're talking about. I can say more about that, or Susan can probably say way more than me about that, but even if you don't want to use Lecture Tools, students can take notes, and that's private to them. So I think it's fabulous to be paying attention to that. You can't see their notes, but you can surely see, wow, a lot of notes were taken between minute 30 and 32. What was going on? I mean, that's analytics. It's not very sophisticated, but you know something was happening there, and then you go into the class and say, what was going on when I started talking about, you know, whoever? What happened? So I think that's really very valuable. If you move away from, or in addition to notes, students' private space, you do a discussion board, then you can see everything. And yes, I think mining that is very interesting and helpful. Again, a lot of concerns around privacy and, what Lecture Tools does is, it makes some people nervous because it's a bit invasive, but it's some really juicy data. Do you want to say more?
Well, I'll just speak about Echo 360 because I'm more familiar with that. I mean, we're piloting Lecture Tools at Georgetown. Probably Lucas can speak about that. But so the features already that come with Echo 360, the instructor is able to see bookmarks or any notes that are made public, though. You could keep notes private, but if you ask your students to make those notes public, then you can access all that information through the analytics.
And I guess also that it requires, obviously, that all the students watch all the lectures, right? And since, in this case, the students have already seen the lecture in the actual classroom, that means that if they were to go back to the capture, they usually just use it for review before tests. So it's not as much seeing what they've already seen once again and then discuss it. That it hasn't been used organically that way by the students as of now. As of now, we don't really have that sort of juicy organic stuff to go off, I guess.
I mean, part of what's exciting to me is just the different uses on here, right, that we're talking about, because you can just not even read their notes, but notice where they're doing something. You can pay attention to their, ask them to make them public. You can do discussion boards, do all sorts of things, chop them up into nuggets, use particular prompts, et cetera. So, you know, classes are so different, so having those options is useful. We have like 2 minutes
or
something.
It looks like we're at the end unless there's a burning question out there.
If there's a burning question, we can take it. Otherwise, we'll hang around. Oh, are we good with our online situation? Great, fantastic. Thanks, you guys.
Thank you, everybody.
We'll be up here if you have any other questions.